It is Ryan Seacrest here. Everybody needs some variety in life. That's what I love about Chumba Casino. They know how to keep things fresh and exciting. All their games are free to play, like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire. You can claim free daily login bonuses, too. And they release new games every week. So spice things up with ChumbaCasino.com now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Need parts now? O'ReillyAuto.com offers in-store pickup, same-day home delivery, or next-day home shipping. Get more parts your way at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Mad Yourself a Man.
A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Mad Men
and talk about it.
So excited for you to join us for another wonderful episode of the world's greatest Mad Men podcast. Mad Men, a show about how sometimes dudes from the 60s were complicated, you know?
Yeah.
That's essentially what it's about.
I don't know why they had to go and make things so complicated.
But, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I get it, I guess.
Well, they're acting like they're somebody else, and it's getting me frustrated because that storyline sucks. But yes, please give us 5 stars and a review. Please tell your friends about this podcast. If you have any friends who listen to Pod Yourself the Wire or Pod Yourself a Gun, The Sopranos, please tell them the show's back and that we're here because we want to remind people that we are back. And
be
some
our
people,
pretend we, friends yeah. and yes. pay us for it.
Yes. Also go to patreon.com/podcast to listen to every episode early. And also you get a bonus episode every week of The Fraudcast, where Vince and I and Brendan and others talk about other stuff. Okay. We have a wonderful guest today on today's episode, which will be from season one of Mad Men, episode 5G. And our guest is a former Pod Yourself champion. This man is a friend of the pod. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, welcome Laramie Legal.
Ooh, baby, baby, it's a madman.
Oh, yeah, I love it. I like it.
Hard to get by, you know?
Yes, it is. How are you doing, buddy?
Boy, I could complain, but who'd listen, you know?
We would.
I'm getting texts all the time from these politicians asking for money. They want so much money, bro. What's it going to?
Yeah, it's strange. We're recording this on Halloween, so the election has not happened yet. By the time it comes out, it will have happened, and I assume we will all be celebrating.
By the time you hear this, we may already be in prison.
Yes. No, I assume that by the time you hear this, we will all be mid-celebration. You know, of the fact that both candidates were killed in a car wreck.
I guess my $5 is going to be the difference based on this text message.
Dude, you got to do it. Otherwise, like Donald Trump, he might not get to be president. And
I don't like that.
Put all the woke people in camps, and then we can do jokes again.
Yeah,
I thought
exactly.
He was already the president. Isn't he the current president?
No, he's my president. I know
there
that
you go.
Much.
Well,
he's,
there you he, go.
Yeah, this is his third term, I think. You know what's very funny to me is getting messages from the DNC being like, give us money. And I'm like, hasn't your whole campaign been about avoiding asking normal people for money? Like, it seems like everything you've done is about how, hey, we don't want to rely on,
And I thought
coalitions
it was like,
of people who.
And then there was a whole thing like, look how much money we raised ever since we made Joe Biden dropped out. We raised all this money. And
they said
like,
they raised $1 billion. And there's
still
only
asking
what?
For it, though? I don't know.
Yeah, there's only like 7 states that matter. And you have $1 billion. So
and what are they possibly going to do with that money? I'm sorry, but at this point, I'm like, what are you going to buy? Another commercial? Come on.
Wisconsin's got to be crazy, right? My guess is if you walk outside your door in Wisconsin, you're hit with like flyers from every candidate in the world, right?
Good, good.
Because I know here it doesn't matter.
You don't walk out your door in Wisconsin, though. That's not a thing.
That's true.
That
yeah, good point.
You do. You yeah. just
the chances
inside?
Of the Unless chances of Washington
fried
or,
cheese is on sale.
Heyo.
I'm sorry.
If Washington or California go for Trump, that would be a surprise.
All right.
I know they're not using the money.
No, no, you're right. You're right. We got to talk about the Mad Men. So, first question I have for you, Laramie Legal, is what's your favorite advertisement?
From Mad Men?
No, just in general. It can be from Mad Men if you want.
Cindy Crawford, Pepsi, 1998, maybe? Oh, wow. 94.
What was she doing in that commercial? I don't think I
just
fully
looking
remember.
Good.
Just
looking
good. She was really just hot and drinking a Pepsi?
She had like a drip going down of sweat, kind of like, and she was hanging out by the machine, the old school Pepsi machine, and it was just like,
and she was sweaty.
Cindy Crawford's hot, right?
She is hot.
So enjoy.
It's been a while since I've thought about Cindy Crawford, but she was like,
she still looks good.
She was so hot that like it was a meme. Like, well, what you know? Well, what if it was Cindy Crawford? You know, people would just say like Cindy Crawford. Oh, there are no Cindy Crawford. Or what if
I tell you another good one is Bud Bowl. You like that Bud Bowl?
Bud Bowl, yeah, that was good.
I don't remember Bud Bowl. What's Bud Bowl?
During the Super Bowl when the little Buds and Buds Lights play each other.
Yeah, the beer bottles play each other in
and
a game.
And then somebody wins.
Yeah, and everybody, no matter who wins, Anheuser-Busch wins. I watched a very bad movie. I cannot remember how old I was, but like it was a terrible movie, and I watched it just to see Cindy Crawford's boobs for like.
It was probably Fair Game.
Three fair. Seconds at the most.
Cindy Crawford.
Fair game, fair play. It was with Richard Gere.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And she was so hot, they're just like, this will work.
Yeah. And she was interesting because, you know, a lot of bad actors are over actors.
Yeah.
And she was very much an under actor, which is interesting.
She was method in that sense.
Okay, I found a picture of Cindy Crawford topless.
She was in Playboy.
Should we just wait for you to have a moment?
Can you just give me a second? I'd love it if you'd give me a fucking second. Wow. You know, here's the thing about her. Oh, no. Yeah.
Hold on. Come back.
What's your other favorite ad?
Do you remember the Quiznos ones? I really like those.
Oh, yeah. I liked it. Yeah, I like the moon guys, but they were talking about Quiznos.
Yeah, the mentally ill ones.
Yeah, yeah, those are good. Like Cindy Crawford's too hot. I don't like looking at this anymore.
I do like the old school Life magazine's 1960s cigarette ones with like a baby and a doctor in them.
Those.
Those are some of my favorite stuff.
Yeah.
So good.
Back when cigarettes could do like print advertisements, it was very interesting because it was like slowly they chipped away at what they were allowed to do. but like in that moment, like after like being like, doctors say it's good for you.
Yeah.
But before they outlawed cartoons, it was like the perfect, like, you know, it was just
the two things I remember. I remember the cartoon with the cartoon camel with the dick shaped nose.
Yep. Yeah.
And then I remember women like laughing raucously with their mouths very wide open, holding a very thin cigarette.
Yeah.
Were,
like a Virginia Slim or a Newport. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, welcome to flavor country or like it's your time now, baby, or whatever. Yeah.
There's two good ones. I think one's from the '50s. It's a woman holding an actual newborn, like naked. And it says, and it's got like Lucky Strike or Camel or whatever it is, and it's like as gentle as a newborn's breath or whatever, right? Like that's how gentle that cigarette is. And then the other one was a kid in what passed for a car seat that day, which was flat and in the front seat.
Passed for a car seat is just made of knives.
It was like your child.
You put this plastic bag over their head, it'll keep them safe.
Like, clearly, if you crashed, that kid was dead. But it said something like, you keep your child safe, so keep your cigarettes safe. Like, it was some, like, nod to, like, how good these cigarettes were for you. Again, like that thing.
I love it.
And now every ad is just for, like, different types of Viagra. And, like, it's almost like a political election where, you know, they had the Cola Wars in the 90s. I think now we are in
the Boner
Wars. Yeah, the Boner Wars. Like then I saw the last one where it's like, it's not a pill. It's like it's a collection of dissolving crystals that'll actually absorb faster than a pill. And my idea, Mad Men light bulb was like, why do we not have snortable Viagra? Like is the first person to have, because everybody that's taken Viagra knows that you snort it, it hits you faster. Like that's just we all know that.
Why am I just learning this?
Yeah, I didn't know that. But that's cool. Are you
serious? Oh, you didn't know that snorting hits you faster than
a pill? Well, I know that snorting things for sure hits you faster. I just never
I snort like a cheese stick, that hits me faster?
I would imagine. I mean, you snort something, like people snort what do you call it?
Cocaine?
Adderall.
Yeah, Adderall or the Vicodin. That's the one I was thinking of. Opiates.
You shouldn't snort Vicodin.
You shouldn't, but people do because they're like, I want this to hit me faster.
Yeah, but they're stupid if they're doing it with Vicodin, because Vicodin is like 90% acetaminophen. So it's like it would take forever to snort whole pill of Vicodin.
It's not good. I'm not saying it's good, but I think the general perception
is you snort it,
it hits you faster. Hence why,
cold water extraction. You take the pill, you crush it up, you put it in some water, like a shot glass, right? And then you put that in the fridge for a while. What happens is that all of the acetaminophen will be at the bottom there. And in the top, all of the water will basically, because the only thing that's soluble is the hydrocodone. You're welcome, America.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I took Oxy a couple months back for a tooth abscess, and they were like, now don't get hooked on it, but like they don't give you any refills or anything. And I'm like, well, how am I going to get, you don't get me enough, you know?
Yeah.
But that stuff's great. That's a really good product. Whoever invented that.
What a funny joke. No, don't get hooked on it. People are dying.
Yeah.
But I did get it because it was super delicious and it made life a lot better. So I get it.
I had my first opiate in 15 years in the ER because I had kidney stones.
Yeah.
Very much needed it. And I will say it is very annoying to be on an opiate when you're using it as needed. It just works, you know, it's just like, oh, the pain's gone and I feel better from not having pain, but like I didn't want KFC or nothing. It was like, you know, that was the thing about like opiates back in the day. It was like, I'm high, I'm gonna listen to music, I'm gonna order some KFC, and this was just me as an adult.
Life
but this
good.
Is not a podcast
no,
about how to extract opiates and how good they are.
No, this is a madman podcast, and we of course cannot start the podcast without first listening to the theme song. Mad yourself, man. Mama always said you'd be there. Chosen madman.
Yeah, I would have gone with maddest man
drunk.
There.
Shut up. New advertising. Podcast. Blue moon in your eye. Mad yourself, man. Mad yourself, man. Mad. I thought you were going to take your dick out for there for a second. Vince,
why are you saying weird stuff?
That's a great theme song, guys. I really enjoyed that.
Thanks. I did it myself.
So we are You Bitch. Today we're going to be talking about from season one of Mad Men, episode 5, and it's called 5G. And this episode came out August 16th, 2007. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
Yeah. Don Draper wins a Nuki Award for his incredible advertising. He did it all for the Nuki. He gets his picture in Ad Age, which no one reads except for his long-lost brother, who shows up unexpectedly and gives us a few more hints about Dick Whitman's past.
All right, I like it.
Or Donald Draper's past as Dick Whitman.
Same guy.
Same guy.
But Vince.
Now you know.
Hey, if you don't know, now you know, Whitman. Mm-hmm. But Vince, can you give us some context about the 60s? Like, what was happening at the time that this episode is set
in? I think what you're trying to say is that we cannot understand art without some context about the period in which it was set. And for that, we use a little segment that we like to call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
Yes, sir. We are going all the way back to August 16th, 1960 is when this episode was set.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things going on. There sure. were two competing bills about, or I think competing version of the bill. There was one sponsored by John F. Kennedy, which was planning to raise the minimum wage to $1.25 an hour.
Oh, shit. Hell yeah.
Meanwhile, there was a competing one from Barry Goldwater for $1.15 an hour.
Yeah.
I like that.
I love that. Yeah. Back in the day, they were just like the most conservative person in the most conservative party was still like, well, yeah, we got to raise the minimum wage.
Yeah.
Now you can't get anyone to be like, $15 an hour? What about nothing and war? Have you thought about that?
That's what your money would do. Enjoy.
Yeah. Ugh. But so how much was $1.15 or $1.25 back in?
Yes,
in
Matt.
Those
I know how, you know how fond I am of the inflation category inflation calculator. $1.15 is $12.25 in 2024 money. $1.25 is $13.31. The actual federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. California, however, is there's a proposition to raise the minimum wage to $18
right.
an hour and down to $16, I think, if you have less than a certain amount of employees. So there you go.
Interesting. So, but those bills were for the federal minimum wage, right?
Yes, they were for the federal minimum wage.
Right. So they
California was not more liberal than the rest of the country back then, which I think some people forget. It was actually like the place where Reagan came from and all the arch conservatives.
Right. Who, yeah. Yeah.
Who was the second
Nixon
bill again?
Barry Goldwater. Goldwater. Yeah.
I don't know if it was a separate bill, but it was like a different version. It was like a different version of the same bill.
A lot of times, the Senate and the House will have different things and then they come together.
In lighter news, one of my themes going back to 1960 is that everyone is feral and insane.
I love that.
And on that note, Australian boy kidnap victim is found dead. Sydney, Australia. Graham Thorne, 8, a Sydney schoolboy kidnapped 40 days ago, is dead. Police found his body bound and gagged in the suburb of Seaforth today. The decomposing remains had been wrapped in a blanket. Graham disappeared on his way to school July 7th, a few days after his father, Basil Thorne, collected winnings of $223,000 in a lottery. It was the first kidnapping of a child for ransom in Australia's history. Australian police have conducted their most extensive search for a missing person since Graham vanished soon after he left his parents' apartment for school.
Oh, I see. He won
$2 million.
In the Nixon, lottery, and then his child.
It was a Lindbergh baby situation.
Is he okay?
No, he's dead. They found him bound and gagged in a thing.
He's not okay?
So he's not okay.
He's not okay.
That's too bad. What a fun story.
Did they pay the ransom? Yeah. Or did they get to keep their money?
I don't know.
I assume not. I mean, they're Australian. They're like, shove off, you can't have my money. Yeah,
that's not a ransom.
Oh, fuck you! Fuck off.
Another story. This one is about how much Russians love girly magazines.
Yeah, they do.
Moscow. The influx of Western tourists has caused Soviet youths to develop an interest in American publications, which often depict feminine charms. Tourists who arrive in autos soon collect crowds. An American who parked on Red Square the other day found himself surrounded by about a dozen English-speaking teenagers whose questions went like this. Your car is German? Yes. Ah, but are you German? No, I'm an American. Good. Do you have any magazines? No. But what kind are you interested in? Ear-to-ear grins appeared. Playboy and Esquire. Why are you interested in those magazines? Because we are young.
Oh, yeah. What the fuck do you think? why do you want internet? Playboy? Oh, I don't know. The articles. Fuck you.
They were good articles. Are many copies of these magazines circulating in Moscow? Ask about Elvis. Some old copies sell for about 5 rubles, 50 cents. What do you know about Elvis Presley? Do you like him? Maybe. He is called Elvis the Pelvis, no? Yes. What do you think of Louis Armstrong? He's very famous in America. Do you know him well? Yes, we have heard some of his records, but they are hard to get. Do you have any with you? No. What did your car cost? In marks? In dollars? 5,000 marks. $1,200. That is interesting. A car of similar size would cost about 20,000 to 25,000 rubles in the Soviet Union.
What's
Soviet
a mark?
It's German. Like a simp or like a like a rube. No, it's the German currency before the euro.
Oh, okay.
Deutschmarks. Yeah.
Oh, all right. I thought it was
what they used to buy the Jews with.
Okay. Finally, this is going. I'm sorry that I'm spending so long on this, but
no,
I
like
one
this.
More.
I like this.
It's about GOP unites celebrities for Nixon. So you know, like how nowadays the GOP tends to get like the bottom of the barrel celebrities. Your Kevin Sorbos,
your Kid Rock,
Hulk Hogan,
Robert Davi. You got your Chuck Zito. But we're gonna go back to 1960, see what it was like.
Okay.
Vice President Richard M. Nixon's campaign organization today unveiled a new Celebrities for Nixon committee aimed at corralling political support in the entertainment world and allied fields. Actress Helen Hayes and Hollywood producer Mervyn LeRoy were named as co-chairmen, with George Murphy, a former movie actor, as honorary chairman, and Jules Alberti of New York as executive director. Miss Hayes headed a similar organization for Dwight D. Eisenhower in 1956.
Is it possible I just don't know the names of famous people in the 1960s?
Yeah.
Like all of those, you know, like didn't sound like any of them were Greta Garbo, so I don't think I...
Bob Dylan.
There's a few here. Charter members of the celebrities group include John Wayne, Irene Dunne, Freeman, and then parentheses Andy Gosden, and then in parentheses of Amos and Andy fame.
Oh, Andy from Amos and Andy.
Yeah.
When you date Irene Dunne, you're like been there, done that, right?
Hey, I like it.
Yeah. Catherine Cornell, Walter Pigeon, Jinx Falkenberg,
Walter Pigeon,
Barney Balaban, Faith Baldwin, Charles Buddy Rogers. I've heard of him, right? Pickford, heard of her.
Yeah.
Dick Powell, Louise Beavers,
Dick Powell and Louise Beavers? Both?
Both?
They got Dick and Beaver? Shit.
They put those together on purpose.
Yes.
William L. White, Cobina Wright, Edward D. Stone, Elizabeth Arden, Eddie Rochester Anderson, Dina Merrill.
It's Eddie DeStone. It's Nikki DeNeck. You know what I mean?
Eleanor Stieber, Ward Bond, Jeanette McDonald, Gene Raymond, Gordon McRae, Sheila McRae, and baseball star Ted Williams.
Okay. I know Ted Williams. His head is frozen somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back.
Anyway, I feel like you guys are properly contextualized. You know what the minimum wage was in 1960. Australians were just kidnapping each other left and right. Russians loved Playboy, and there were also some C-list celebrities that loved Nixon.
Oh, well, now that we know that, we can move on to the Draper D story, which, you know, like I said, I'm not doing them every episode, so I've only done so far one. And now here's a little clip of another one. It's a song from this era. You listening out there won't like it. And you'll be like, if you're just going to do this, don't do it, Matt. Well, fuck you. This is You Don't Know Me by Ray Charles, but a version about this episode. I'm not going to do the whole thing. I just, you know, I might even fast forward a little bit to...
Because I look exactly the same.
All right.
But he don't know me.
We'll start here. All right.
No, I'm not Dick. I'm Don. Don's got a different life. Got two suburban kids and a big titted wife. To you, I'm just white trash, shit kicking country ass. No, you don't know me.
Yeah. Well, you can listen to the rest of that song at the end of the episode. You won't, but I will, because I really like that song.
It's really pretty. It's good, really like
you
that.
Know, we should confer on these, because I was thinking a good song for you to use for this episode.
Yeah.
Would have been Personality Crisis, New York Dolls.
Oh, yeah, sure. You know, yeah. Conferring on these is a great idea. If you ever have a suggestion, please do it before the episode.
Frotcast@gmail.com.
Frotcast@gmail.com. If you have a suggestion, you're like, Matt, could you do this? That would be great. It saves me time from having to watch an episode and go like, what's a song?
You know, one thing that occurred to me, one's ever given me $50,000 never to see them again.
I know.
Yeah.
It's quite the opposite, in fact. I've given them a lot of money to not see me again.
Oh, wow. Well.
But I want to be the recipient.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anyone I know who so badly doesn't want me in their life they'd be willing to give me money.
Yeah, it's so nice.
That would be so sick.
I know.
So this episode is about everything that Vince said it is about. And now let's talk about it. Vince, what did you think of this episode?
I liked it. I know you and Brent especially like to bag on the the personality crisis aspect of Mad Men, like the hook of finding out who Don really is. And I think I'm mostly in agreement with you on that, but I did think the brother angle was particularly compelling.
Sure.
And I also really enjoyed, I don't find Peggy to be the most interesting character in the show, but I feel like this was a compelling dilemma for her, like trying to figure out how to not embarrass the boss and
not ruin his life.
Blame all of his bullshit on herself. Also, as you know, like a struggling writer sort of myself, a lot of this like rang true in a lot of ways, and maybe in ways that are like embarrassing to me, but this feels like the burgeoning of the era when the sign of social status was to succeed in art in some way. Like there's like a clear rift between the generations of Don and Roger Sterling's generation do not give a shit about being seen as like artistically interesting, whereas all the younger guys, like, this is very much like a badge of honor and a social standing thing. And I like this episode a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Laramie, what did you think of this episode?
It did strike me as one of the last times people were jealous of writers, like in general, like where you could be like, oh, wow, he's written nationally.
He got published in a magazine.
Funny.
We used to be a proper country, Laramie, even like 5 years ago.
And it was funny to see other people be like, well, I could write, you know, and like,
that was great.
Published. Can you imagine how good my stories are? I thought it was good. I thought there was, agree with the Peggy part. She's not the most dynamic character early.
Yeah.
Especially as she's kind of feeling her way out. And I really thought the Christina Hendricks, whatever her real name is.
Joan.
Joan. I love the idea of like, no, it's your job to just protect them so they can keep making money for this advertising firm. Like the rest of it is completely irrelevant to your morals or ethics.
The only reason you're supposed to get their schedule right is so you don't accidentally reveal that they're sleeping with their girlfriend to their wives. That's the only, their job is essentially make sure you don't dry snitch accidentally. Oh, shit. Can you hear me?
You got to start this whole riff over again.
Hold on. Yeah. This is my internet connection is unstable. Is it still? Shit. Okay, hold on a second. Wait a second. Is it still unstable?
I just found out Aubrey Plaza is Puerto Rican.
Is she? Oh, man.
Yeah, because she came out against that joke or whatever.
Give me a second.
Aubrey Plaza?
She's so pretty.
Maybe we call her she doesn't do it for me. I find her
really
funny.
Oh god, she's kryptonite. No.
I did not like her when she came out, because like she came out and like her thing was making fun of Sarah Silverman, and at the time I was like, Bitch, Sarah Silverman's way funnier than you, but I think history has redeemed her on that one.
Okay.
So. Hi.
Hello, Matthew.
You're still freezing. You're sort of back.
Am I?
Kind of.
Am I back?
Not
okay,
entirely.
I am back.
I heard that.
Shit, what is going on? Hold on. Just give me a second.
What's that?
Are you there, Vince?
I'm here, I think.
Are you there? And then I thought that sending your wife to her first lover was a bad idea.
I see you, Matt. I see you're moving. Your video's moving. That's good. You changed your camera angle. I don't know how that's going to help your internet, but...
Shut the fuck up, bitch. Okay. Hopefully that doesn't fuck our recording up too much. What was I saying?
You were...
Oh, yeah, the job.
Yes, yes. Talking about Joan and Peggy, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I was saying... yeah, Peggy's job is essentially, like, the only reason that she's in, like, controlling Don's schedule is only important insofar as you got to make sure the schedule doesn't accidentally reveal that he's going to his girlfriend's place. Like, that's
exactly.
Essentially her
job.
We got
to keep his mind free to come up with good ads. He can't be spending all day doing, you know, planning his appointments.
The two other notes are he came back all greasy and calm. Yeah. I thought it was a great line.
Yeah, one of the Mad Men lines I've ever heard.
Post-nut clarity, for sure. And then I also like the idea of just criticizing people aren't so blatantly in front of them. Like, I didn't care for the story, but I get it. You know, like, I thought that's great. We've lost that a lot. You don't really just ever just throw someone's art out in the garbage, you know, as you compliment them.
Yeah, people are no longer honest about how shitty their friends are at writing.
I mean, there was a lot of great backhanded art compliment. I mean, it helps that this episode was written by a writer.
That does help. That always helps. That's one of my main issues with most shows is like, well, I feel like you should have gotten a writer to write this.
Yeah.
Is that guy, what was the guy's name, Cosgood?
Cosgrove.
Cosgrove is a knob. I mean.
Yeah. He is, but he's like a... He's sort of like a great himbo because he's like he just takes it on the chin in every one of these scenes, and he's like, "Oh well, thanks, guys."
I thought one of the underrated lines too, or underrated observations was, and he did it without telling. It was published before he told anyone or whatever. Like, in other words, he didn't mention it until it was out, which I thought is so like unwriter like as well. Like, you'd know like 6 months before the Atlantic came out. You know, like the first moment. Yeah,
and they're mad at him about that. They're like, this fucking idiot didn't even like warn us so that we could be ready to be jealous.
We could have had like all of our shitty comments about it like ready. In the tank before Fired. It came out. Yeah, we could have had him in the quiver. Matt, did you pull that clip that I asked you to pull about Cosgrove's, because Paul Kinsey, like his compliments, they speak to me. I'll just say that.
Yes. So we'll start with this storyline, the Ken Cosgrove and also Paul Kinsey and Pete Campbell storyline, where Kenny is celebrating his win and Paul and Pete are super fucking mad at him. It starts off with Kenny is telling his coworkers he got a story published in the Atlantic, and fucking Don just reads like the opening sentence, and immediately I was just like, oh, this sounds like shit. But here's a clip of this scene.
Tapping a maple on a cold Vermont morning, Cosgrove here got a story published in the
Atlantic Monthly.
You're a writer. You write.
Well, yes. The weird thing is, short fiction is not my strong suit. I have two novels.
Novels? About what?
One is about a roughneck on an oil rig who has to move to Manhattan because his wife's mother is sick. The other one is, well, a woman who's a widow. She kind of got stuck with this family farm. No one will help her except this boy.
Those don't even sound stupid.
Thanks.
The second one,
I love that,
like,
compliment, because I was thinking basically the same thing. Like, wow.
I think the second one,
like when
stupid.
A non-writer tells you an idea and you're like, fuck, that's not even a stupid idea.
Yeah,
I can't
now,
even bag on
now
you.
Now I'm
it.
More mad.
Yeah.
I'm more mad that I'm interested in this. I want you to tell me it's about a space alien who fucks. And then it's like, yeah, I knew your dumb ass would write that one.
Yeah, I knew you'd have a stupid idea. Stupid.
But it's not even that either of those ideas sound especially like captivating. Like, they're not like good log lines or whatever.
They're plausible. But, you're like, yeah, I could see a good novel being about that.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's like, oh shit, like that's just, those are both subtle enough in theme that it feels like only a good writer could come up with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, because here's the thing, like, pick a great American novel and then give me like the elevator pitch. Like, it sucks. Like, yeah. Novels, the reason novels exist is because, like, you know, you have to write them, and the elevator pitch isn't really good. Like, what's the Great Gatsby about? It's like, oh, there's this guy, and he's like
a green light.
He's a great kind of like the Don Draper of the Roaring Twenties.
I guess it's just Don Draper. It's, what is it about? It's about a madman.
Yeah, that's why you have to use other stuff. You're like, okay, it's Mad Men in Long Island in the Roaring Twenties.
What about a hunter talking with a bear?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a story, right? That has some
yeah.
Place.
See, that actually sounded good. You know, despite
I thought
what
that
fucking
sounded terrible.
What fucking Trudy had to say about it.
Trudy.
But yeah, no, like
Trudy. That was another great scene. Sorry, Matt. I didn't mean to step on you. But that's another great scene, and I'm sure Matt, like, when you've had like a bad set at stand-up comedy, or you write something,
I've never
that you
had
know,
a bad set, but go on.
That's true. Or you write something that, like, you know, people aren't gonna care about, and like,
never
someone,
happened, but go on.
Someone compliments it in a way that you know that they don't give a shit about it, but that's like meant to be a compliment.
Well, that was really
like,
interesting.
Uh huh.
Wow, yeah. That's so brave. You stand up there in front of all those people.
How did
comedy
you
must be
this?
So hard.
Yeah. How did you do this?
Yeah. Where it's do like, you get no one, this stuff?
No one ever saw Larry Bird and was like, wow, basketball looks hard.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. You know what I love about your set is the way you make it look just so ridiculously difficult to do stand up.
Yeah.
Like you're laboring so poorly.
Sisyphean task.
Yes. But yeah, it is like very funny watching their type of jealousy, because it is a relatable jealousy. You know,
absolutely.
It, like, even if it's like beyond writing or whatnot, it's anyone who's ever like worked in an office but in their mind they're like, well, people don't know I'm actually like a really good gamer or whatever, or like, people don't know, but I actually I've got a podcast, you know. And then you know, someone else in the office is all of a sudden, you know, like, oh yeah, my thing, yeah, it's a whatever, like, it's just got, you know, 75,000 people listen weekly or whatever. And you're just like,
oh.
I felt good about myself in this office because I thought you were all dumbasses and didn't know how great I was. And now you're telling me that you're even greater than it, like, I'm going to kill you, dog. Now I know how people die at offices.
I'm going to straight up murk you, dog.
But what I love about watching their jealousy, though, is they're like, both Pete and Paul are mad about different things. Mm. Like Paul is mad because he's like, but I was supposed to be the artsy fartsy one.
Yeah.
Who the fuck is this guy? Pete is mad because Kenny's dad is a salesman.
And well,
so
Pete's
he shouldn't
mad.
Be able to do this, yeah.
Pete's mad because he thought he was the artistic account executive.
Oh, well, do you think? I think Paul thinks he's the artistic one.
No, but yes, Paul thinks he's the artistic one, but Paul is in the art department. So it's sort of a different thing. Like, Pete thinks he is bigger than being an account executive.
I thought the art department was just Sal. I thought
when I say the art, I mean like the creative side. Like,
oh,
Paul's
yes,
like
yes.
A copywriter. So
yes,
Paul, like
yes.
Obviously a copywriter is going to have artistic pretensions, but the idea of the account executive having artistic pretensions is sort of a different thing.
Right.
I think.
Do all these dudes make like pretty good money, like, because that's the impression I get, or at least like
we covered this last episode. So like, I mean, we're going to talk about it later in the show. Like, Don obviously makes good money because he's offering his brother $5,000 to go away, which is $53,000 in today's money. But I think the
I mean, I'd sell you three brothers right now.
Yeah,
yeah,
20 apiece.
So last episode, Pete said something about how he makes, what was it, like $3,500 a year or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was
around $40,000 a year.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Which is not great, but also
no, it's bad.
He's
like
also a, like
25. I don't
yeah,
know.
He's yeah. a junior executive. He's like 25, and also he comes from a family that knows the Roosevelts or something. So I think for him, the money as status thing is not
as big a deal
no,
he
as
needs to be
the,
published in a magazine.
Yes, that's the status that he cares about, and he also feels more deserving of it because his because of the fact that he's like this blue-blooded American, and he feels like Kenny doesn't deserve it because he's mm-hmm. he's just some guy.
It seems like a super expensive lifestyle though, in terms of like the dress.
Oh, they got a company card.
Oh, you think the suits and stuff and the... I mean,
that's a great question. I don't
maybe
know
not the
that.
Suits, but how many suits do you need? Like one?
They're going through packs of cigarettes. I mean, just cartons. Like,
well,
like
they get those free because that's their spot.
That's
their,
true.
That's
yeah.
their client.
I guess, yeah, so there's a lot of good... Bennies.
Maybe there's probably dry cleaning at the office too, you know? So they probably don't have to worry about that. Yeah, so, I mean, listen... the point is that
you could just be like, Peggy, clean the jizz stains out of my boxer shorts.
Exactly. That's why you have girl slave.
As opposed to wife slave at home.
Yeah.
Who has to have the meal ready when you get home. When's the last time you had the meal like that ready? Is it ever?
Dude,
I've never seen that.
I am the one who cooks.
Yeah, I've never seen that before
Which
in my life.
Sounds really sad.
I am a good cook. You actually haven't had my cooking yet because every time I see you, I'm like, you cook. You're Vince.
Well, you do put the milk from the cereal in the freezer
yes,
first.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, that is a certain type of gourmet move.
Everything I do with a purpose. But here is just that scene of them being jealous, which I love.
I think I'm going to vomit.
Who the hell is Ken Cosgrove? He's from Burlington, Vermont. His father is a salesman.
What the hell does that have to do with it? I have this story about this crazy night I had where I ended up in Jersey City with all these Negroes. And we all got along. Can you imagine how good that story is?
No.
I love that so much where he's just like, man, so many amazing things have happened to me. Like one time I hung out with black guys. Yeah. And
we got along famously.
And we got along. Can you imagine Paul Kinsey in a room with black people not being just the most annoying fucking dude ever?
He would be Quentin Tarantino on Arsenio Hall.
Yes, 100%. That's perfect. And it just also sitting there just being like, look at this racial harmony. And everyone's just trying to hang out. Like literally just trying to chill.
Yeah.
Oh, what a bitch. But yeah, he's super jealous, and he's got an interesting storyline here actually, where they are simultaneously pitching this bank, this idea about a different kind of way to charge for, you know, a line of credit. Or maybe it's a checking account.
I think it's just a bank account. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a bank
they're trying account. To figure out how to get more bank accounts. That's what
yes.
they want. Yeah.
And so they come up with this idea for the executive account. Essentially, the way they explain it is that the banks mostly target women.
Yes.
And women are the ones who go into the banks, which
yeah, they used to give you free toaster for opening a bank account. That's what they're talking about in that scene where
that's
they're talking
crazy.
About like, oh, we're trying to compete for like better toasters for opening a account. Okay, sure.
But the difference with this account is your bills will never be sent home. So they won't
right.
know that
yes.
you're stupping people. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is it's kind of crazy to me because I'm just thinking about like, couldn't you just open an account?
I wouldn't recommend you,
can you just
cheat on your wife.
Well,
she
no, I'm
would
not
probably
gonna cheat.
Murder you.
I don't see how the money also equals the cheating. I guess it's because this is with the assumption that you're buying jewelry.
No, the assumption is that the wife is handling the woman slave duties, which includes like you know, balancing the checkbook and like, taking care of the, like, she doesn't do anything except, you know, make sure the household runs, which includes like seeing where the money's going. So they're assuming that the wife would have the access to all of the bills, and she's going to see like, oh, you spent like $100 at Delmonico Steakhouse in the middle of the day or whatever, you know, like they're going to see your, they're going to see you, like,
they're going to assume that that's cheating.
No, yeah, just or gonna it's going to be in like, your business, right?
Yeah. Hey, remember when you said you were going on that business trip? What's this, you know, like you say you went to a different
Why'd you go to the Hustler Superstore?
Yeah.
It says you spent $300 at Hustler Superstore.
What is your work?
What is that? Where is it? The stuff you bought. I think it's interesting because I'm like, well, I don't know how you
could. The stuff you bought is a great conversation. It's not here, okay?
Yeah, yeah. Where is it? What can you even? What can you even buy with that much money?
Like, I can't tell you.
Did you get a lot of dicks? Is it edible undies? Does it just taste good?
What have you had the edible undies? What are those made out of?
Not good.
I can't imagine. Yeah, I did one time. I
Laramie
did.
Just sitting at his desk with a drawer full of edible underwear. Yeah, he's just snacking on them throughout the day.
God damn it. I got another yeast infection.
Every prepper has them because you want to have food on you, right? So you
Sure.
Yeah. Just eating edible undies during the apocalypse.
You're no,
just,
but what are they made out of?
I always assumed fruit roll-up, but then one time I think I had a girlfriend who bought them, and I remember them essentially being plastic, but like if you waited long enough they melted in your mouth.
Ooh.
It was I'm gonna have to try them
so you
again.
You can get more microplastics in your system.
My controversial take is you shouldn't be mixing food with sex stuff.
I completely agree. Not controversial
made it look
at
good,
all.
But
I like food and I like sex. I don't need to combine them at all.
Yes,
no.
I agree. I don't like combining anything with sex. I don't even like combining my raunchy comedies with sex. I'm okay with a movie being like a sexual comedy, but when I saw titties in Caddyshack, I said, "What are we doing here, guys?"
Mm-hmm. The nudity was too good.
Yes, that feeling is not that's not funny to me. That's a very serious feeling, being horny.
Well, that was in the days when they didn't have enough comedy, and they were like, comedy was like low and dirty, and you had to combine it with
you had to go to a strip club to see a stand-up comic back in those days.
Pretty much.
But
these Harvard guys were like, how can we get the average American to read our like stupid comedy bullshit? Oh, I know. Put like titties every three pages.
I mean, they're not
wrong.
It did
work.
They're not. Yeah, it worked. It worked out great.
The other thing I would say is I'm never sending one of my ladies to her first bang, right?
To her first what?
Bang.
Her first, her the guy she lost her virginity to.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, we'll get into that, but I just want to really, really quickly say, in this meeting where Paul and Kenny and Pete and Don are talking about like this account, Paul calls it a private account.
Yep.
And then Don goes,
"Executive."
No, executive. And he, Paul has this moment where he's like, "Well, that's why you win the awards."
Mm-hmm.
Later in this episode, you see them doing the pitch, and they say it's an executive account, and the guy who they're pitching goes like, if you add the word private in there, then we got something going. And it's a very subtle moment. You know, it's not like they cut to Paul, but I think in that moment Paul felt just vindicated enough in his creative abilities that he was the first one to say private, that he feels confident enough to just rag on Kenny in front of all those women later. That's my theory, is that he was like, yeah,
I agree.
I said private. You know what? Fuck Kenny. And then he goes there and he, you know, basically humiliates him in front of all these like secretaries that he's trying to impress with his Atlantic article. But yeah. Oh, shit. Who the hell is that?
Hey, it's me, a published author in GQ. I wrote a story about this night I went out in New Jersey and met all these nice black guys. Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
I love it. Yeah.
But yeah, I gotta take some time to edit that. So we need to take a break for some ads.
All right. Well, it looks like it's time to take a break for some ads. So stick around, listen to these ads, and we will be right back.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge. From worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And we're back. Mad Yourself a Man, episode 105 with Laramie Legal. So, we were talking about what was going on with this jealousy plotline. Pete Campbell is mad. He is...
so mad.
He is hanging out with Trudy, his wife, whom he loves, and he's like, "What?
Does he?
I think he loves her. I don't think so. I mean, here's what I think about him in love is I think like love for him is like he was very excited that she was going to cook for him after they got married. Yeah. And so I think love for him is this like transactional thing a little bit, and it's also like having a woman slave.
No, he likes that she makes him seem normal. Like he likes her as a totem of his adulthood.
Yeah, it's sort of an alibi too. Like I can't be a killer. I have a wife.
You can't send a girl. You can't send your girl to another guy. You just can't do it. You can't do it.
Listen, it all depends on what that guy can get.
Straight up pimps her out. Yeah, she's a means to an end, and that's what he uses her as where he's like, "I'm going to pimp you out." So that I can get published in Boy's Life.
Can we talk about the scene where she's with the publisher dude and he's like...
Yeah, we're going to get there and everything,
okay,
dog.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, because we're doing the whole show.
Okay.
It'd be so weird if we didn't talk about that scene.
Okay.
You know what? We're not going to talk about it.
Fuck it. I guess my point is that my guy was like, hey, this doesn't have to be an official thing. We can just fuck.
Right.
Yeah. I thought that was like the boldest move. You're like,
I thought he made some
good
points.
He made a lot of good points.
Brilliant.
So Trudy's ex is, I guess, works in publishing, right? And
he's Simon and Schuster.
Right. He's Mr. Simon. He could be Schuster related. And Pete is like, hey, Trudy, I've got this story about a bear who talks. Could you possibly talk to your ex-boyfriend?
Did you pull the clip of her complimenting his story?
No, I didn't.
Oh, that's great.
But I did.
It was well written.
Yeah, it was well written.
Lots of words,
and it was too modern for her. And she, you know, was like, but I thought you hated him, you know, given the whole he fucked me first thing, and
popped my cherry.
And yeah,
got there first,
gushed all over the bed.
But it was very clear that Jesus, Vince. It was very clear that Pete didn't really care and said, well, if you want to make up for fucking someone who's not me that one time before we met, you will talk to that guy.
This makes up for that. That's very strange.
Yeah, well, I think the transactional thing is very much a part of what he thinks love is. And so he goes, she goes to meet her ex, and he is like, out the gate is a little creepy bastard.
And, well, she has a type.
She does have a type. Which I didn't consider that. Which is a little creepy
bastard. Yeah.
I didn't consider. Yeah, she has like, she's like, I like someone who's got dead eyes.
Yeah.
Someone who nothing
gets
me
wet like a fucking weasel.
Yeah, I want a weasel, round face, can't grow facial hair, and might murder me.
Could.
Yeah. So she meets up with him, and he just, it's so funny because you can tell before the scene even gets started, like, this is going to be him asking for sex, and you're kind of waiting for a buildup, but even the character's written like, what are we doing? You know why you're here.
Yeah.
And I have a clip of that scene, and it's just, it is really, I mean, it's romantic in a way.
I miss being with you.
That's very sweet to hear.
It doesn't have to be more than just being with you.
No, I can't. I'm a newlywed. Maybe like in some movie. Sometime in the future when we're old. Maybe then.
I want you now. I don't want you old. I want you now. I know you'll never leave him. I can keep a secret.
Jesus Christ.
That's the dream. Unconditional sex, right? It's like, I just want your body, to be clear.
No,
like,
yeah.
You don't have to.
I don't want you when you're not at your physical
yeah,
peak.
Yeah. What do you mean old? This has nothing to do with your mind. I just want to let you know that.
You have a shelf life. You know that, right?
Yeah. The thing that I miss is that time we fucked.
Yeah. That's
I don't know how I can make that more clear, Trudy.
And you were so young.
And I'm not looking for a relationship, to be totally clear. Like, yeah. I'm just looking for you.
Yeah. I have a girlfriend. Yeah. It's fine. I'll
She's
be
great.
Okay.
She's great.
But you know what I actually really appreciated about this? Because later, Trudy goes on to... meet up, have dinner with Pete and be like, I did it. I got you in boys' life. What I like is we didn't see I think a worse show would have had him go, well, I guess I'm not going to put your husband's short story about bears in anything. And then she would go like, well, I'll tell you this and that or something like that. Instead,
hey, listen, hand job. Playboy.
Yeah.
Mouth stuff, Esquire.
Yes.
If we do the full Monty with the back end, I think we can start talking New Yorker. Short of
what
that.
What power that is.
Dude, I would do anal for New Yorker.
I would too.
You know, just a shout and a murmur. Come on, buddy. Call me Simon Rich.
That's why they called it that, because that's what you had to...
Simon Rich got to get Simon pegged. You know what I mean?
But she totally decided to screw him over, right?
I mean,
she put him in boys' life on purpose.
I don't think so. I thought
she said I could have gotten you a New Yorker. I think she says that.
She says
mouth stuff and
she's implying is that what it would cost her is fucking.
I thought she was choosing.
I could have let him gape me and then blow me like a jug band.
Okay. I read it a totally different way. I read that she put him in boys' life on purpose to send a message, as opposed to like she could have put him in New Yorker for nothing too.
If I let him pin my ankles behind my ears like a single mother, I could have got you.
What is happening?
Blow into Jesus. My gaping asshole like a jug band. Wow. My God.
I didn't know what kind of show
you talk about that. Allison Brie like that. but man. But yeah, it's funny. I have the clip where he's just pissed off about this. He's such a bitch. Here it is.
He said he was going to get you published.
That is incredibly swell news. When? Where?
Boys Life magazine.
What?
It's a $40 fee, and a lot of people read it.
Are you kidding me? Boys Life? That story was good enough for the New Yorker. You don't want me to have what I want.
I could have gotten you in the New Yorker. Or in the Encyclopedia Britannica if I wanted to.
Why didn't you?
Why would you do that to me? Why would you put me in that position?
What position is that? You know what I mean? Ooh. That's a jug band. That's me doing an impression of a jug band.
That was really good.
So $40 in 1960, that's $426. That's a lot to pay to get yourself.
To be in boys' life?
Yeah, to be in boys' life. That's
it's also
lot.
Very funny that, like, you know, he's jealous of
the fact that Kenny, you know, was in the Atlantic and got $100, and they're like, "You can be in Boy's Life if you pay." That sucks. Yeah. In fact, actually, now that I think about it, she didn't get that from the ex. That's what happened. She found out. Well, how can I get him? How can I get him published in something? And found out, well, you can actually pay some money and you will get in Boy's Life. Yeah. That's what it is.
By the way, Kenny Cosgrove apparently got paid $100
for
short fiction. First of all, no one's paying you for short fiction.
Short
in 2024.
Fiction is hilarious. Yeah.
Short fiction. No one's paying you for short fiction. He also got the equivalent of $1,065 that article, and everybody spat on it like it was nothing.
That is
at least double your average freelance fee in 2024.
That's amazing.
I think the most I ever got paid for a freelance article was like $1,800 in like 2017, 2018.
Yeah.
Nowadays, like $800 or something.
Yeah, the going rate right now, I've gotten $800 a couple times. The going rate right now is 3 to 5. So this guy's getting paid more than double that for short fiction.
What they did was they realized, let's not pay the writers, then we'll keep all the money for ourselves.
We can have an AI bot scrape whatever you wrote and put it through the fancy thesaurus machine, and we'll take all of that ad money from you.
I bet we could get ChatGPT to write about tapping a maple on a cold Vermont morning
easily.
Have you read, there's a 404 Media story about, there's like a science fiction, famous science fiction magazine that's like, their whole thing is they've published a lot of like up and coming writers, and that's sort of what they've dedicated like their entire existence towards.
Yeah.
But the problem is not so much that people are submitting, you know, stories written by AI. It's like the flood. Like they apparently got like thousands and thousands of submissions that all followed this very particular pattern that whoever was like writing the prompts for ChatGPT had figured out was like the way to get published in the science fiction magazine. And then they didn't have the actual time to go through the submissions to actually find ones that weren't written by AI, because like it's so like the scale of it is so insane that,
well, that's awesome. Wow. That's great. Yeah. Right. That's a really good world. You know, that's cool.
That's cool. Neat. And it only takes 1 gallon of water to produce each one of those AI written scenarios.
Well, it's not like we need water. The ocean's made of it.
Wonderful world. Yeah.
You just get some from the ocean and then make some
words.
It's
right there, Vince. It's right there.
But
the thing I told someone is that I think ChatGPT is a pretty decent hammer, but it's a pretty shitty scalpel. Like, it's still nuance and shades of gray is terrible. For I want a 20 pages of nonsense business speak, sure. It's great.
Yeah. But yeah. If you want a press release or a pitch email,
no problem.
Yeah. It's going to nail that.
Yeah.
Kind of
like something where there's not
gonna
a right
nail
answer.
It, but it's going to do it.
Yeah.
You know what sucks though is like I am now, I don't know if you're, I think we're both getting a lot of these like pitch emails from like people who want, like they work at like PR firms or whatever to get guests on podcasts. And I feel like they are all now being replaced by ChatGPT people, because none of them feel real, because you'll like send a reply that's human, which is just like, hey, Anna, sounds good. When can, you know, tell me more about this person? And then immediately, 30 seconds later, the longest paragraph you've ever seen. You're just like, oh, you're fake. You're not even real. Yeah.
It's not a good machine for like writing well. What it is it's a machine for lowering public
standards.
For lowering societal trust. Like it's a great mechanism for making us distrust each other even more.
Yeah.
It's a very solid C+. But you're never going to get the polls, which you need to like enjoy stuff. Like, honestly, you'd rather read something terrible that was interesting than ChatGPT,
because it's about intention and there's no intentionality with ChatGPT. ChatGPT does not have an intention.
I would like it if I could like AI, like you take a porn video and then you put yourself in it and it looks like you're having sex.
I think you can do that.
Oh,
what?
Yeah.
Well, what am I doing this? I should just be watching that.
All it does is it does bomb an African village, but yeah. You can get it.
See, I hate that. There
are trade-offs.
AI is essentially pressing the button that kills one person somewhere in the world.
The box.
Yeah, but it's like, but I got a good video of me fucking some titties. Okay, so let's move on. So just to end this storyline, Kenny is telling his novel ideas in front of the ladies, and he is humiliated by Paul, who tears it out. And later, Paul comes up to him like a scene later and apologizes to him. And Kenny gets the last word.
Listen, I know I've been a bear, but I've been competing neck and neck with people in this place. I didn't know I was competing with you, too. You lost.
I feel like that is the moment in which Paul would do a shooting.
I had this conversation with Vince in like 2016-ish.
Yeah.
This exact combo. And he's like, oh no, you lost, bud.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
That's how we talk to each other.
I thought we were just hanging out. Okay.
You're like, no, I just want to let you know you lost.
I don't think he did lose, though.
What was the context of the conversation? Who can...
Well, I was like, I as a writer, too. And he's like, Columbia.
Yeah. Oh,
he's fucking sure, yeah.
And ever since you've been plotting your revenge,
exactly. Slowly,
you own the private equity firm that fired him. Oh, that would be fun.
For an outlet. It's called Hollywood.com. Does that still exist? I wonder,
dude. That's one of my favorite commercials.
Such a simpler time.
Okay, so now we get into the Don Draper and Adam and Betty storyline. We start off this episode. It opens with Don and Betty coming home drunk after he won an award that has a horseshoe on it, which is interesting and is symbolic because Betty is so hot. She's like so fucking hot that making her like her attractiveness is sort of a horseshoe theory. She's so hot that I don't want to have sex with her.
I'm not that into Betty. Yeah.
She is so hot that my penis would be scared. Like she might as well be an orc. Screwed. You know what I mean?
For me, it's always going to be Jessica, or not Jessica, you know what I mean? Christina Hendricks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's always the choice.
Yeah, Jessica Alba.
Allison Brie. But yeah, no, she's like magazine spread.
Yeah.
Yes, pretty. She's like a walking magazine spread where I'm not, it's like I'm not sexually attracted.
I don't think she can be
her.
Dirty enough.
No, yeah, clearly not. I mean,
I need some pathos, you know, like
I need,
I want to see regret in the eyes.
Yeah, I want the hair to be mussed up. I want someone who's like not trying to keep it together so much.
Yeah, and who's a little sad they're with me, you know?
Yeah, that's what I need.
She looks like a Barbie, really. I mean,
she does.
And she keeps it so tight. And so
I know when they're like taking off their, you know, their clothes, they don't get all the way naked. They sleep in like their dresses and shit. But like she is so hot. Anyways,
I really loved the scene just in terms of like it was a scene of marital bliss in some way. It's like,
yeah,
that's a great like domestic scene where you get home with your spouse from an event. And you're both so shit-faced that you immediately pass out in your clothes, and the husband doesn't even have the energy to lean over far enough to turn off the lamp. He has to unplug it. Just yanks the plug out of the wall, and then they wake up in their clothes. I thought that was a beautiful scene.
And they're both so hung chow in the morning. Freaking children.
It's like, they're just coughing up. They're just hacking up lungs.
The coughing was so real because it was like, yeah, dude. Like everyone in this era was just they were smoking and drinking so much that every morning must have been hell.
And it really made me understand how like it never occurred to me why Alka-Seltzer is named Alka-Seltzer. But then in the scene, I was like, oh, duh! It's like it's like the seltzer for alcoholics.
I didn't realize that until you just said that.
It's like alcoholic seltzer. Because you know you wake up shit faced and you want to feel better again. I was like, oh, I get it now.
I didn't know that till just now. Just
you're blowing my mind a little bit, homie.
Add geniuses. Yeah.
Are there any other seltzers that I should know about?
There's White Claw.
Yeah, maybe there's. Well,
no,
what
I
else?
Meant the of the Alka variety. Like, is there Sniffing Glue Seltzer or is there?
Coca Seltzer.
Emfeta Seltzer. There's Opa Seltzer.
Yeah.
to the rescue. You remember that ad? Alka-Seltzer to the rescue. Ding.
I just remember pop, plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is.
Such a relief.
Such relief. So Don is now in his office. He gets a sexy call from his guma, and Peggy accidentally listens in and is like, "Ooh, this is horny."
There's something nice about sex. A lady saying she wants to be ravished in the afternoon. That's nice. That's a nice gesture.
Yeah, I mean, listen, she wants some afternoon delight, and Peggy is you know, she's a little horny monster. I love Peggy because
I want you to come over here and blow my back walls all over the curtains.
That's right. Yeah, I want you to bust. That's it. That's all I got. Okay.
Do you think did she imitate a guy's voice? Because she said it's like it's Fred Beatrix on the line or whatever.
Bix. It was.
Yeah.
I have it written down here somewhere. Yeah. Bix Beiderbecke. Bix Beiderbecke.
So is that cool. A boy or girl?
I think it's a guy.
So is she like, hello, is Don
Taylor? Hey, yeah. This is me, Bix Beiderbecke.
I got a
Hello, this is Bix Beiderbecke. I was just inquiring about my back walls.
So Bix Beiderbecke is a famous American cornetist and pianist. I found a picture of him online. He looks like Pete Campbell if Pete Campbell was a ghost.
This is Bix Beiderbecke. I have a jug that hasn't been hooted on in a while.
Yeah.
Could you gape my asshole and play me like a jug band? This is Bix Beiderbecke. Beiderbecke.
So Don is all flustered and is just like, excuse me, Peggy, I gotta go to Bix Beiderbecke's house and play.
I don't like doing sex stuff unless it's a secret.
Yeah, I gotta get my dick played like a cornet. And so we have a scene, another one of these scenes between Don and Don and his Gumar, and I'm like, this is another one of those things where it suffers a little bit from, like, you know, first season syndrome, where the show it's not even that, it's just the character is not telling me at this point, the character's not telling me anything I need to know about Don Draper other than, like, he likes cheating on his wife with somebody,
right? Midge, you mean?
Yeah, with Midge. Yeah. And so the scenes where they're together, I just don't find all that compelling. But there was one moment in
not
which
Midge's anymore.
In which what does she say? Oh yeah, she
I like says, being your medicine.
I like being your medicine, and he just goes, okay.
That was a lot of talking. Yeah,
it was a lot of talking for him to just be like, cool beans.
I like that because it puts the lie to Cosgrove and Paul Kinsey's entire strategy, which is they're trying to play the fuckboy strategy. They're going to all these secretaries being like, I'm a sensitive artist. And it's like, clearly what these women want is a guy who's entirely compartmentalized and not in touch with his feelings at all, but has like a really nice haircut and, plays
tone.
It cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, listen, we all know that's what women be wanting. But yeah, so, you see him kind of like his whole the whole point of that scene is to be like, you know, this is someone who has stuff on his mind. But as soon as he's like in a position where he gets to have his drug of choice, he immediately forgets about all the things on his mind. And it's like, yeah, I know what that's like.
well, he comes back all greasy and calm.
Yes. He comes back all greasy and calm, and then we get the scene, really what this episode is about, which is Don meeting his long-lost brother, Adam. And so Peggy comes to a meeting and says, hey, a guy named Adam Whitman's here to see you. And for the first time ever, like, I've never seen Don that shook. About something
discombobulated
that didn't have to do with like being horny and so
because he's in a good mood like this whole until that point.
Yeah, he won an award, he got to fuck his girlfriend, he got to, you know, be aloof while she was pouring her heart out, all of his favorite things. And then all of a sudden this guy comes and fucks it all up. Don meets Adam,
and Adam is like so excited to see his brother, and Don just keeps pretending not to be Dick Whitman. Mm-hmm. He just keeps going like, I don't know what you're talking about. And it's very funny to me because it's like, Don, you look the same. Like, what do you actually expect to happen here? Him to go like, oh, okay. Like,
no, he's just communicating the message. Like, I'm different now. I don't need you reminding of me of this past shit. I've completely turned the page on this, and there will be no nostalgia tour.
Yes. I gotta say though, like Adam's desperation was pretty palpable.
No, yeah. he did it. So that's Jay Paulson. Like, the actor is Jay Paulson. I thought he did a wonderful job.
Yes, he is amazing.
He was amazing, and I didn't. You know, I got him. I got a little. My heart hurt watching him like try to like elicit some understanding or some some affection from his older brother that he probably idolized his entire life. That was pretty fucked
up.
She wasn't my mom. So. Just some whore. yeah,
bitch.
Yeah, it was. It was actually moving, and it was also a really, I think, well-written character too, because and well-acted, because the character, you're not sure, you're like, is he slow, is he stupid, is he like a trickster, like is he in it for some money, is he trying to get a payout, like you're not really sure.
No, he's just a nice guy.
And then
I kind of thought it was a payout too, though. I agree. Like he was.
No, well,
like,
you're not entirely sure, and he is also the human one in all of these interactions. Like he is just trying to elicit, like you were saying, Vince, any kind of human emotion from him, any kind of like tenderness from someone who's like literally his brother, who he thought was dead, and is also kind of wants him to, at the very least, be like, "Yes, I'm Dick. Also, sorry about that." But instead, Don is just like, what are you doing here? Why are you doing this?
Don can only think of it in terms of transactional relationship. And he's like, okay, clearly he wants something out of this and not, love.
It's a great character. And so we do get to hear more, get a little bit more Don backstory while they're at the diner. And we learn about some of his family members. And I have a clip.
I knew you weren't dead. I knew I saw you that day hiding in the window in your uniform. I was only 8, but I knew it was you.
It was a long time ago.
I can't believe when I saw that picture in the paper, I thought it looks exactly like him, except around the eyes.
I love that part. Except around the eyes, I could tell that clearly you had aged, and also you're battling demons. I felt like your eyes said you were battling demons, but essentially the same guy.
Yeah. The eyes, the thing that's a window to your soul.
It's a window to the soul. Yeah.
You could tell there's nothing there anymore.
Yeah, there's something different about it. I think I saw nothing, but I knew it was you.
Donald Draper. What kind of name is that?
Hardly know her.
What difference does it make? People change their names. What happened to her?
Mom?
She wasn't my mother. She never let me forget that.
She's gone. Stomach cancer.
Good.
Straight up.
That's a little
good.
Rough. That's a little rough.
Yeah. So clearly, he's got some mommy issues and some Uncle Mac issues.
Are we to take from that he is adopted, or that he's like in some sort of changeling situation
I thought he was a half brother or something.
Yeah. So it is hard to know at this point in the series. We will be finding out more about his mother and the way in which he grew up. But I think what we're supposed to take from that is that he is living in a dysfunctional home with an uncle and with somebody who has raised him being like, I'm not your mother.
And he dippadelphia'd right out.
He dippadelphia'd. Yeah. And, yeah, that whole scene is it's like a two-part scene. By the second half of it, Adam is completely deflated, and he's just like, I thought this would be different, which, yeah, it should have been different. It is very weird that he's acting that way. So anyways, Adam is disillusioned with Dick and how he is now. He's just like, this isn't the Dick I knew. The Dick I knew was strong and solid and veiny and virile. And so, yeah, he sends.
I don't know. Maybe if this, I don't know if this hit harder because I have like a son and a stepson, and I was just like, I don't know. It, that the whole scene really, yeah, it hit hard.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, some people are hit hard by dick and some aren't.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I got you. I don't know why I did that accent. I got you. It's just Tommy Wiseau for no reason. So, what a story, Vince. It hit with me too, but I think the way I kind of was, it didn't hit on a personal level. I just thought it was a great character because it showcased Don as being kind of the psychopath here, and his brother is being like a weirdo, just weird enough that you're like, wait, what was his past? You know, like where did Don Draper come from? So he gets a letter from Adam that has a picture of a young Dick Whitman and a young Adam Whitman.
I think part of the reason that Don is so freaked out is that Peggy comes in and she says, "I read all of I opened everything except for this one." So it's like she's sort of driving the point home that like, yeah, you are getting by solely on like your secretary's discretion here.
Yeah.
There's a very thin line between you and your past that could be severed at any moment, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of a threat. She doesn't mean it as a threat. She means to show how she is good at discretion. But you're not supposed to say how good you are at discretion when you're being discreet.
Discreet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, she's pretty clueless overall. I mean,
she is. So she thinks she has no idea anything about this Adam shit. She actually thinks he's cheating again, and there's a great scene in which she goes up to Joan after Betty and the kids show up for like picture day, and she's freaking out because Don isn't there, and she's assuming that he is with his Gumar, and Joan is so wonderful in this scene, and so is Peggy. This is just one of my favorite. This is probably my favorite scene.
If I make an excuse to Mrs. Draper, she could catch him in it, especially if she just leaves. Or even worse, then he'll know that I know where he was.
Where is he?
I don't know.
You do know. And you're going to tell me. Or I'm not going to tell you what to do.
I can't believe you.
Well?
He saw her the other day. He came back all greasy and calm.
No.
Oh, God, now I've told you I'm the worst secretary in the world.
Who is she?
I don't care. Please hurry.
You're making this so complicated. You go out there and you entertain her and her brats. And when he comes back, let him have an excuse. He'll have one. And then you just start apologizing for, well, just how stupid you are.
It's probably what I would have done anyway. Oh, God, no, I really shouldn't have told you.
You shouldn't have told me.
It was probably what I would have done anyway, which was just keep calling myself stupid until they felt sorry for me.
It's funny because like her instincts are so bad. Like clearly the move is just to not say anything definitive. And then, you know, like that's like,
yeah.
She's but what if I do this? And then this happens. And then you're like,
it all served a great purpose, which was Joan getting some gossip. And if there's one thing Joan loves, it's gossip.
Good gossip.
So Dawn gets
she stores it in her boobs.
All right. All right. Listen, we're not a misogynist. You can't just talk about titties in the middle of this podcast, man. Come on, man.
You call them that. I was being respectful.
That's me drinking the milk. So he gets the letter. He burns the picture of himself, but he gets like what hotel he's staying at, and he's staying in room 5G. And he has this moment where he like empties out a briefcase and then he opens up the side drawer of his desk and looks down and you're like, what is he doing?
Is he going to kill that guy?
Yeah,
right.
I kind of thought he was.
And then he shows up and, you know, he talks to Adam, you know, he says, I'm coming over. You know, don't call the cops or whatever. You know, he's coming over, make sure you're, you know, not wearing a bulletproof vest. He tells him, he has this conversation where it just is very clear that the misdirection is that he was about to shoot him, which is very funny.
Look, I'm going to come over. What I need you to do is dig a hole about the size of a person.
No one knows you anymore, right?
Yeah.
You're completely
Do you have large sheets of plastic you could just kind of drape around? No reason. And then this scene happens.
So no Abigail, no Uncle Mac. Nobody, huh?
I know. It's strange. Everyone always said you were too smart for your own good. Of course, Uncle Mac thought you were soft. But you're not, are you?
No, I'm not.
What are you doing?
And he kills him dead.
I like that better. That's really
didn't have the makings of a varsity athlete, he always said.
That's right. No, that's a joke. I added that. No,
this is the last time someone was too smart for their own good. Like historically, like 72 maybe or something.
Probably like one of the, at least one of the inventors, like one of those guys who gets killed by their own invention.
Is that the Segway guy?
Yeah. Yeah, Segway guy. He was too smart for his own good.
I don't know if that's exactly how I would characterize it, but.
I mean, he invented the Segway, America's favorite vehicle.
And then he went off a cliff.
Yeah. Well, he did one dumb thing in a life of super smart things. You can't be judged by your one dumb action, even if it is the one that kills you. So, no, this is actually what happens. He offers him $5,000, and I have that clip.
It's $5,000. That's all there is. I want you to take it, and I want you to leave New York, and I don't want to see or hear from you ever again.
That's not what I wanted. That's not right. Where do I go?
Take your own life. I have too much here.
And then he kills him.
I'm glad you went back to it. That was good.
Yeah. No, he didn't kill him. I was just like, kidding again.
When he's like, that's not what I wanted. I thought he was going to take his pants off, kind of. I love a little bit.
Do you guys have a guess how much $5,000 is in today's money?
Jesus Christ. Yeah, is it like, it's $50,000. Oh, $50,000?
$53,260.
It's not $260, it'll get you somewhere.
Yeah, Jesus, I'll take that.
Jesus Christ. You know, it's funny because it's like,
you think I need to see my brother again? I don't even have a brother. Give me that $53,000.
Yeah. Dude, we should just start going up to businessmen and just saying, it's me, your brother.
You from, left when you were eight.
From the past. One of them is going to be like, that's possible. And they'll give us 50.
Grand.
Yeah, here's 50 grand to go away. I would love to give 50 grand to go away. Please make me go away. I will go so far.
I will go make my own life.
I want to be far away. I'll never get $50,000. And there's a very sad moment where they're like hugging and stuff like that. There's also this other moment, scene between Adam and Don where Don does like the fakest, he's like, did you miss me at all? And then there's a long pause and he goes, of course I did. And that is like some of the best John Hamm acting I've seen so far, because
you
that
can't
was
see it in a podcast, but he really excels at and he does it like at least seven times in this episode where he makes a face which is just like what he's like, it's like a disgust mixed with, it's like a face that just says, what the fuck is wrong with you? What is your problem? It's like his main acting move, and it serves him well in almost every scene, especially in this one
because he has to like shape it. He's like a lizard, he has to figure out what face shape to do in order to lie and say, of course I did, in which it's almost like a moment in which he's like, I'm gonna have to talk to my brother like he's a girl I'm trying to fuck, right?
You know
like, we're a national organization, Claire.
Yeah. What?
Sorry.
What is that from?
That's from the Ben Affleck one.
Oh.
Where he's a rock bank robber.
Oh.
The Town?
The Town?
Yeah, John Hamm's the FBI guy.
Jinx. Oh, you owe me a coke. Anyways, John Hamm doing great acting. Good stuff. And then he comes home and Betty is like, hey, let's go visit my dad. And he's just like, yeah, let's go. Let's run away. I love my family. I certainly wouldn't want to be uprooted from my family. And that's how it ends. And that's the episode. Favorite scene, least favorite scene, something I missed, Vince?
I would love to bring up something that we didn't talk about, but it's just, it's so hard to beat He Came Back All Greasy and Calm. That whole scene was, that's the Madman magic right there.
Yeah, it is Madman magic. Laramie, anything I missed? Or favorite scene or least favorite scene?
I think I really enjoyed when he's like, it wasn't for me, but it shows promise, you know, or it shows like ambition. Like, I enjoy a backhanded compliment, and I enjoy how... I think envy and jealousy were more refined back in the day. Hmm. You know, they were a little more, they were upfront about it, but they were also
open. They were open about it.
Yeah. But it was also more elegant because it was like, oh, you hate me because I've published. You know,
yeah, there is something I think refreshing about open jealousy, because now everyone's just like shamefully jealous. We're all silently, we're all just seething when we should just be like, I'm sad. I want everything, and for you to have nothing. And I think, you know, it's okay to say that out loud. Mm-hmm. I agree with those. If I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, I'd give it a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
I mean, this is a great episode. Really like the brother stuff. Greasy and Calm, so many good things. Just honestly, just a great episode of Mad Men, and therefore that's gonna average out to a solid B+.
Oh my god. Laramie, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
I think probably I'd say around a B+.
Okay, so that's a solid B+ from everyone, and you know what, a solid A+. Man yourself a man. Good for us. Laramie Legal, thank you so much for coming on and talking Mad Men with us.
A pleasure, gentlemen. Happy to see both of you thriving. Never I be can jealous tell. Of you two.
Never been better.
I can tell. We're all happy. Where can people find you? What's your address?
I'm in Seattle, Washington. I'm on the tweets at Laramie. I think I'm on the Blue Sky, Laramie. I got off a Hinge. I'm not on Hinge anymore. Sorry, everybody.
Oh, shit. What do you want now?
I'm not on anything. I might get into that J-Date. That might be my next move.
It's a good time for J-Date.
Or the Blacks Only one was looked pretty good, too.
There's a Blacks Only?
Yeah.
That's a bad name for it.
I think it's called that. Maybe it's not.
It can't be called that. Okay. It can't be. That sounds like a 60s water fountain. That's no way it's called that. But yeah, find him on whatever dating app is racistly named. Thank you so much for coming on.
Appreciate it, gentlemen.
Yeah. Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping,
squeezing, broken 60s guy. Patreon.com/Rockcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out, and we are given prep school names and possibly even some fucking, taglines, because it's a show about ads. Every ad has a tagline. So, Vince, are you ready?
I'm ready. I'm giving some prep school names.
Let's do it. Let's put on our little whatever prep school people wear. It's some sort of like a bolo tie. I don't know.
I'm putting on my Madras pants.
Yes, I'm wearing my knickers. I assume old-timey wears knickers. Okay, here we go. Emil Andrews.
Emil? Mille, that's Latin for 1,000. Call this guy Stacks.
Oh, Stacks.
One stack, it's like 1,000.
Yeah. A million here, a million there, Emil Andrews. Next is Justin.
$1 million, that's not cool. Sorry.
Yeah, what's cool is a billion. Okay. Next is Justin Harlacher.
Harlacher? What are you, German? I'm going to call this guy Jerry.
Oh, Jerry, the Kraut. You were going to kill them in the war. That was good. Next is Ryan Sweeney.
Sweeney? Weenie? Like a hot dog? Call this guy Franks.
Franks and Beans, thank you for your patronage. Next is Thomas Slunny.
Slunny, more like slummy, We call this guy single occupancy. I don't know.
Yeah, I like it. This person is...
No. Let me run that back. We call this guy hot plate.
Oh, yeah. A hot plate for one, please.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. All right. Next is Jennifer Sanford.
Sanford? More like Chevy.
Oh, Chevy. Built tough. Next is
the
Andrew.
The heartbeat of America.
Oh, yeah. I think that was Ford. My bad. Next is Andrew Julius.
Andrew Julius? More like...
You got this, bro. I know you can do it. Julius, more like Caesar. Pizza, pizza.
More like... We call him the Gentile.
Okay. You wanted to flip it.
Yep.
You did. Okay, only a few more.
I'm ready.
Dan Gailey.
Gailey? Is he doing things gaily?
Come on,
like walking?
Man.
We call this guy Swish.
All right, Swoosh. I didn't even do a tagline. I just changed yours. Next is Jacob Carnes.
Jacob Carnes. He's going to the carnival. What do they eat at the carnival?
Funnel
we
cake.
Call this guy Kettle Corn.
Kettle Corn and funnel cake. Step right up. It's three card Monty time with Jacob Carnes. Next is Ryan Thompson.
Ryan Thompson.
It's a lot Ryan, to work with there.
Ryan Thompson Seedless. We call this guy Grapes.
Oh, hey.
It's a grape variety.
It works great because we're into that grape culture. Next is Lucy. Just Lucy.
Australopithecus.
Australopithecus.
Remember the Lucy skeleton? It's a...
Oh, yeah, I do.
You know, listen.
Old Bones Lucy here.
Thanks for...
doing my best.
No, that's good.
Okay, and two more. Bryce Donovan.
Good old Bryce. B. Rice. Brown rice.
We call this person Zatarans.
There you go.
This is the San Francisco treat. And finally, James Moran.
He ran Mo. We call this guy Marathon.
Marathon man, James Moran. Catch him if you can.
If
a man
you have
with
a plan
named James Moran.
Gonna
eat some Zatarans with Bryce Donovan. All right, those are our shout outs.
I hope they enjoy us having a stroke to try and come up with these.
It's worth every penny. They know it. And you can spend your pennies on us getting a shout out if you go to patreon.com/fraudcast and join the $8 tier or more, and you will get that shout out. Do it now. And once again, a couple episodes from now, if you haven't heard your name, feel free to email us fraudcast@gmail.com. Patreon.com/fraudcast. Please get your shout out and, you know, get the early access to the episodes and stuff and a bonus episode every week. Fraudcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is a Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
Alrighty, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all.
Meow.
In the lobby and want to see Donald, a boy I haven't seen since he was 8 years old. How does he know my name? Probably because I look the same, but he don't know me.
No, he don't know me.
No, I'm not Dick, I'm Don. Don's got a different life. Got two suburban kids and and a big-titted wife. To you, I'm just white trash, shit-kicking country ass. No, you don't know me. Well, I ask about the girl who's not my mom, and my better ass don't. You say they not good cause they hate those guys, considering killing you too. I'm handing you 5K. You say, hey, that's not right. I'm gonna walk away. Here's hoping you don't die. Call bro, yeah, you don't know me, motherfucker. For I suck a dick, and then I eat some butt, then I'll take my dick in your dick. Afraid and shy, I eat your ass from behind. There's a chance that I might eat boo-boo. Oh, you give your hand to me and put it on my balls. I'll watch you squeeze them shits and pull them almost off. Oh, never know the guy with the longy ball. Well, my name is Matt.
I got published in
Small Russian. Dick Weekly.
Yeah, only photos though, only pictorial.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. If you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. Choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.